95.1, waking you up
with Rick and Lisa.
It's good. Well, we have a special guest this morning. You know, there's been a lot going on in this country the last 3 months, but particularly like the last 2 to 3 weeks. A guy that I met years ago in a men's group at our church. His name is Lance Walker, and a pretty amiable guy, fun to talk to, good conversationalist. And that fits because he's a barber in Chambersburg. Guess he's not been real busy right now. But, he's got some really good thoughts. We're going to have some conversations this morning. Hey, thanks for joining us, Lance.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you all this morning.
Yeah, and here on the Rick and Lisa Show, we try not to be divisive, but to be inclusive. And in our community, it's not, them and them. It's us. And so with that in mind, we want to learn. We want to educate as best we can. We're not a talk show. We play music and that kind of thing. But so it's kind of as serious as we get. But we can get serious, and we're not afraid to have conversations like this because it is so important. And the Black Lives Matter movement underway. And so we'll just start off with something I've seen a lot on Facebook, and you probably have seen as well. And people saying Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. They respond with that. Why is that not appropriate?
Well, I think that if there's an issue that needs to be addressed, and someone is saying, hey, this is what I need over here, it turns into a what about-ism. Well, what about this over here? What about that over there? Okay, we're saying that this is, and the fact that it's just, I heard I say matter. All we're saying is matter. We're not saying Black lives are better, Black lives deserve more, but hey, we matter also in the grand scheme of things. We all matter, but it just so happens to be, there are Black communities that are in the throes of racial injustices that need to be addressed.
One thing that I saw, and I like a sign that said, we're not saying only Black Lives Matter.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, and I wouldn't go to a breast cancer rally saying, hey, what about testicular cancer? Well, no, that's the breast cancer awareness rally. And if I'm going to support it. But I'm not going to come in there and try to shout them down or talk to me. Because that is an issue that needs to be addressed, even if my issue happens to be testicular cancer.
I think what happens many times, people either are trying to over-relate, saying, well, we get that, or it's the, we all know people like, well, I can up you one better than that. You tell them about your vacation, they're telling you about theirs.
So, right.
That's
right. Yeah.
So what would you say the Black Lives Movement would like to see? Let's put it that way. Would like to have happen.
Awareness. I think that at the end of the day, this country has a historical past that Black and brown lives have not mattered, so much so that we just got the right to vote in 1964. That was several years before I was born. We've had an incident where. Just the insensitivity to Black and brown lives. In 2017, we had a ceremony for the Navajo code talkers. And there's only five of these guys left who actually helped us win the war. And in that ceremony, they had a portrait of Andrew Jackson hanging up in the background. And even though Andrew Jackson, he's the president who signed the Indian Removal Act. And just the lack of sensitivity by the nation to people of color, that you would have a ceremony for the Navajo peoples in front of a portrait of Andrew Jackson hanging up, who was responsible for, killing their people. It'd be the same as having a ceremony for someone who was Jewish with a portrait of Hitler hanging up in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. So, question for you. You've lived in Chambersburg 14 years, married, raised some kids here. Tell us your experience.
Oh, I've had, where do I start? I've had to go to a store where my son was basically, in my opinion, racially profiled. One of the clerks came and whispered in his ear, we have cameras. But meanwhile, he wasn't acting up. He wasn't, and I made sure of that, and they said, well, no, he wasn't. I said, so why would you, Why would you find it necessary to come and whisper in my son's ear, you know we have cameras, as if you expect him to steal something or do something bad?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen even, there's a lot. There's a lot to unpack on that that I don't know.
That's real life, man. Whatever you can share here, it's good stuff.
And what are, maybe you can include, too, some basic things that people say or do. Maybe they're well-intended, but they don't realize hurtful or racist.
It's when people say, for me, this is a, I don't want to say a pet peeve of mine, and it's like, come on, I don't see color. And I get what people may be trying to say, but I would never tell a woman, I don't see you as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to embrace the totality of who I am. Yes, I am black. Yes, I'm a male. Yes, I'm a father. Yes, I'm a husband. Embrace the totality of who I am. Don't exclude my color, because now you're literally taking away a huge part of me, which in the United States, my color has afforded me or been ill towards me in some way, shape, or form. So it's shaped who I am. And so I think whenever people say, you know, oh, I don't see color, or when you get into these discussions about race, racism, and slavery, you get kind of the one-upsmanship. Well, the Irish were enslaved. And it's almost like, well, we're not trying to compare suffrage and who suffered the most and who, you know, whatever. Or discounting minority when people, whenever I hear people try to explain away my experiences, well, Lance, are you sure how do you know that they were doing this or whatever? And I'm like, well, I've been here for 53 years. I think I'm an expert on experiencing racism, so I can kind of see through some of the veiled situations.
Well, tell me more of your experiences, life experiences. That really gives an insight in what you deal with.
And here in our four state, on a scale like, I don't know, 1 to 10, where are we in all of this? How bad is racism in our community?
I think it's in my opinion, from what I see and what I've experienced, I think it's bad. Watch this. I mean, I moved here from Georgia, and I've never seen as many Confederate flags. Now, for some people, they say, well, that's heritage, and I get that. You can say that all you want, but until you dig into the history behind that symbol and the history of the vice president of the Confederate States, Stevens, what he said about it, and it is a racist symbol, but we still fly it. And I'm, as a person of color, expected to be okay whenever I see that. But you wouldn't expect somebody Jewish to sit in front of somebody flying a swastika.
Right.
There's this standard here that's part of American history, and I get that. All I'm saying is, do we have to flaunt that, and do we have to?
Right.
Germany knew enough to get rid of the swastika because they knew that we've got to unify this. But here in the United States, we had it flying over federal buildings and state buildings and everything else. Until we, you know, that we've come to, but people think that there's nothing wrong with that symbol.
We hear a lot about the talk that parents have to give young black children. The talk is that universal with socioeconomic levels. What is the talk?
I guarantee. Well, from my community, yes, it's because the way we've seen, or I have seen, the policing. The last thing you want is your child to be into, get into something where they get pulled over by the police. So there's some sort of a stop. And this is not to bash the police. These are issues that are going on within our community that people may not realize that the talk is such a thing in our community. Where I've had to explain to my son, listen, you keep your hands on the steering wheel. You answer them, courteously, whatever it is, to make sure you come home. Because there's too many times, and don't get me wrong, this happens in the white community, too. I'm not discounting that these things don't happen in the white community, because it does. But whenever you look at the rate at which it happens to minority communities, from what I understand, the population in Minnesota, George Floyd was murdered, it's 19% African American. The police force is 9%, but the use of force by the police on the African American community, whatever it is, it's 58% of the use of force. These numbers something needs to be done about these numbers. You can't tell me that 19% of the population is causing 58% of the issues that where force needs to be used. The same is true here for Chambersburg. A couple years ago, whenever they had that incident where they had to shut down the football game, I spoke at that meeting because the Chambersburg High School at that time was only 9% African American, but we made up 40% of the in-school suspension. Now, we all know that when you're in high school, there are, you know, we all do, you know, things that we're all kind of, mm-hmm. you know, we do stuff that we wouldn't think about, you know, go about doing it. So I'm wondering, why is it 9% of the population is making up 40% of the in-school suspension? Those numbers have got you've got to deal with those numbers.
Yeah.
Why is that? You know, and so I think that a lot of the racism, I think it's there, and I think it goes. I think it can go both ways. But at the end of the day, if you're a minority group, more than likely you have experienced a lot more racism. You understand it and see it and get it more so than what white people would experience coming the opposite direction.
Now, let me ask you if you can tell one more of your personal stories, because I think that's powerful.
Yeah. Okay, high school. Going into junior high. Now this might not sound big, but we bear those scars when you look back as a child, and I'm sure all of us can remember. Yeah, I remember Billy used to get on my nerves. He would do this, that, and the third. And that was back in, you know, high school, junior high school, and you remember those things. Sometimes they leave scars. I remember whenever I got into the seventh grade, we had history, which was required, and we had black history, which was an elective. And when I look back on that, it made me angry because I thought, so you, the system basically told me, Lance, your history really doesn't matter. We can take it or leave it, but you need to know this history over here. And I also thought, not only did you teach me that, but you also taught the white students that, hey, their history really doesn't matter. I had a teacher in school, and I won't want to call the guy's name, but there was a fellow student of mine, and he was darker skinned, and the teacher kept calling him darkest. He would put darkest in front of his name before he would say his name. Okay, yeah, go ahead, darkest blank. Darkest blank, go ahead. So much so that his dad had to come to the school and have a meeting with the principal and everybody and tell him, listen, this is not going to fly. And this is in the 80s. I had a friend of mine in the 80s at the high school that I should have graduated from. I ended up going to a private school. She was Mexican. She wanted to go to the prom with a guy who was white. She had to get written permission from her parents. He had to get written permission from his parents. They had to present the letters to the school board, and the school board had to approve them to attending the prom as a mixed race couple. This is the deep vestiges of stuff that I'm saying. People like myself, we carry those scars, and when somebody says, "Oh, well, the racism is really not that bad," but whenever I have oral history passed down from my grandfather, I've heard my mother's stories, I've got my own, and they're all lining up with stuff that my grandfather was saying, what my mother was saying, who was born in Georgia, who had to ride the back of the bus. And then I see stuff starting to happen to my children, and it's like, okay, enough is enough. We've got to deal with this.
Well, we have to wrap this up. There's so much to talk about. We could go on for hours. Now, you are a barber in Chambersburg, obviously closed down because of the coronavirus. You're going to be opening up. So your barber shop is kind of a forum, right?
Yeah. I make it a point to everything is open for discussion at my shop. I don't shy away from any of the topics. If we're going to get anywhere, dialogue needs to take place. And so it's open for politics, religion, sex, sports, entertainment, you name it. As long as we can have it in a family-friendly way and be respectful, everything's on the table for discussion.
Appreciate you being on the show this morning.
And let's hope this is the beginning of a good conversation that we're having.
And if I have a quick minute, there are some resources out there for people. If you want to kind of delve into this, I think that there are some authors out there like Mark Charles, especially for those of you who are coming from a from the Christian background, but it's still a good a resource. Mark Charles, The Doctrine of Discovery. Ibram X. Kendi, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Sean Rochester, this one is really good. I definitely suggest this one. The Black Tax, The Cost of Being Black in America. That's Sean Rochester, The Black Tax. And then there's another one, Michelle Ferrigno-Warren, and that's The Power of Proximity.
If you send those over to me on Facebook, we'll link it, and we'll put this audio along with your resources on the Mix Facebook page and also Mix95.com. Thanks so much, Lance. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Keep up the good work.